What is going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
And I'm still Average Ant.
And we are back for another good episode this week. Obviously, some big things happened on Tuesday. So, Ant, you want to talk a little bit about what we're going to get into today?
Yeah, so first things first, apologies because I am feeling a little sick. I might be sniffling a little bit, might have a couple coughs, but... like Big Red did in an episode a few weeks ago, try to hold it back. So with that out of the way, we got the Hall of Fame inductions for the MLB. The 2019 class came out, and three names that aren't really a surprise at all, kind of names that were to be expected to get in, and then one that's kind of like, eh, so we'll get into that. And that's pretty much all we have on the agenda. Obviously, we got some big red ballers and busts, an honorable mention or two. So with that laid out, let's kind of get into it.
Yeah, and so with the Hall of Fame announcement on Tuesday, a lot of big things happened. It was Mariano Rivera's first year on the ballot, and of course, the greatest closer of all time seals up 100% of the votes, the first unanimous. Narrowly beating out Griffey, who missed about three voters. And me personally, I think it's a little bit of, all right, well, we screwed up on Griffey, so make sure everybody votes for Mo.
Yeah.
So that was big. Roy Halladay got in, the late Roy Halladay, so that was really nice to see his first year on the ballot. And of course, finally, Edgar Martinez gets in. Mariners fans all breathing a mutual sigh of relief and exclamation of joy for Edgar actually getting in. And then finally, Mike Mussina just squeaked in at 76.7% in his sixth year on the ballot. And so without further ado, Ant, we can kind of get into it.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess we'll kind of start with Mike Mussina just because he's the least, I guess, I mean, not no disrespect, but kind of like the least notable, I guess. I mean, he's the most questionable to get in, no disrespect. He definitely deserves to be in. I mean,
he's the guy that of this, at least of this class, that you kind of look at and you're like, oh, Mussina got it too? Nice.
Yeah.
Right on. All right.
I mean, he had a career 3.68 ERA, which, I mean, isn't the best all time. I mean, it's not terrible by any means. It's obviously Hall of Fame worthy.
It's solid.
2,813 strikeouts, which is pretty good. He threw 57 career complete games, 23 shutouts, and made 21 postseason starts, but with a 7-8 record. So, I mean, but his playoff stats all around were kind of lower. He had the 3.42 ERA and a 1.1 whip. I mean, career win loss of 270 and 153. So, I mean, not a scrub by any stretch of the imagination. Just like you said, it's kind of like, oh, Mussina got in too. Which is, I mean, shout out to Mussina, solid pitcher, obviously Hall of Fame worthy, or else he wouldn't have gotten in.
Yeah, and absolutely, I agree. It's no disrespect to Mike Mussina by any means, but I'm just the kind of headlines that Mariano Rivera and Edgar Martinez finally getting in, and of course the late Roy Halladay kind of grabbed Messina's a little bit of an afterthought, but shouldn't take away from anything he did. He pitched in the AL East in the steroid era. I mean, that's a lot of slugging, bruising lineups, and like you said, that career 3.68 is all acquired in his time in Baltimore and New York. And compiled 270 wins in Baltimore and New York. I mean, it's at the end of the day, Mike Mussina showed up and just pitched his ass off basically every time he stepped out there. And so, I mean, it's good. I'm glad he got in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like you said, that steroid era, AL East wasn't nothing to mess around with. So
exactly.
So I guess from one pitcher to another, I guess we'll carry it over to Roy Halladay. Rest in peace, first of all. I mean, he did pass away. 2017, was it, when he passed away?
Yes.
So, rest in peace to him. But, I mean, at his peak, Roy Halladay is probably one of the most untouchable pitchers of all time. I mean, I won't get too far into it right now, but He did have his like most notorious, whatever you would call it, is his perfect game and no hitter in the playoffs, or perfect game in the regular season, no hitter in the playoffs in the same year is what he's most known for.
Yeah, and I remember him getting the perfect game, and I was like, ah, nice. It was kind of that like period where the like veteran elite guys are kind of, oh, they're all getting their no hitters or their perfect games, with like Felix getting his later after that, and then and Roy Halladay tosses a perfect game, and you're like, sick. And then the Phillies get to the playoffs, and then he tosses a no hitter against the Reds, and it was kind of like, oh, like Halladay's finally off those crummy Blue Jays teams, like. This is legit. We get to see when it matters, Halladay, kind of the thing that Felix Hernandez has missed his pretty much entire career. And so, I mean, I think that's huge. And obviously, very, very sad, tragic plane crash in 2017. So, I mean, it's on a first year on the ballot. It's awesome. It's awesome to have him in. And that postseason stretch alone just kind of exemplifies how dominant of a pitcher he was over like a decade stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I think
It's
his 3.38 ERA doesn't really kind of it doesn't really put his dominance into perspective really, because when he was at his peak, he was way better than 3.38.
yeah, I mean, he had the ability to be. He's another NL East or AL East guy for most of his career, like I said, on kind of crummy Blue Jays teams for the most part. And Roy Halladay in like a 5 6 year peak stretch, you could look at Roy Halladay and argue he's the best pitcher in baseball. And I mean, I think that's one of the biggest factors for me, at least, and are you Hall of Fame worthy? It's kind of, and we'll get into Edgar Martinez here in a second here, but it's kind of like people would look at Edgar and be like, that's the best DH in the league through pretty much like the whole stretch of his career. And I mean, he had the award named after him, and so it's like, that's, if you can say you're the best at your position during any kind of real time period, in my mind, that's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, shout out Roy Halladay. A couple more stats: 203 wins, 105 losses, a WHIP of 1.18, 2,117 strikeouts on his career. And something that I kind of am bummed out that we didn't get to really see take off was that Phillies rotation of him, Cole Hamels, Roy Oswalt, and Cliff Lee. Because on paper, that was kind of like one of the best rotations to ever be like assembled, really.
It was like a big four. I mean, it was on the back end of some of their careers, which I think contributed to it maybe not being as lethal. I mean, they were still pretty legit, but I get
Yeah,
what
I
you
mean,
mean.
he had four legit number ones as your one through four, so I mean, it is crazy on paper anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely fun to watch. I mean, I'll toss in one more stat just in reference to his kind of decade of dominance. During the years 2001 to 2011, Roy Halladay had 65.5 wins above replacement, which led all pitchers by a fairly large margin. And during that 10-year stretch of dominance, he had a 2.96 ERA, which reflects a little bit more of how dominant Roy Halladay was when he was at
Yeah,
Duke.
I mean, like we both said, nobody's was really like him in his peak. He was kind of one of a kind while he was at the top. So,
I absolutely.
do you want to get into Edgar or Mariano?
Let's get Edgar going. You know, we waited
Right.
long
Yeah, I
enough.
mean, we waited. How long is the ballot? How long are you able to be on the ballot? In 10 years.
10 years.
So,
His tenth
yeah,
tenth
we've
year.
waited 10 years for this, so finally he's in. If he didn't get in, there more than likely would have been riots in Seattle. So, I mean, just
Big
setting it a
fun.
little bit, arguably the best DH ever. I mean, there still is David Ortiz, but I mean, my personal bias, I guess I might put him over David Ortiz. I mean, he 312 hitter his career, 309 home runs. 933 OPS, which is crazy. He led the league in on base percentage a few times, and hitting a few times, multiple times Silver Slugger, all that good stuff. So, I mean, Shout out Edgar Martinez, Seattle legend. You could take it from here.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. Seattle legend. It's about frickin' time that we got this dude in. Edgar Martinez is a tough. It was a tough slot in the Hall of Fame. I think it should have been figured out 4 or 5 years ago that Edgar is a legit Hall of Famer. I don't think he was a guy that needed to sit on the ballot for 10 years. But for whatever reason, he spent the first 6 years on the ballot of just kind of in obscurity. I mean, he was 36%, 33%, 36%, 35%, all the way down to 25.2% on the ballot. And that was his fifth year in. And I was a little nervous. I was like, is Edgar really going to like fall off the ballot here? And then he got all the way up to 43% in 2016, and that's kind of when the Edgar Hall of Fame support kind of like blew up. I can't even describe how many tweets and hashtags, Instagrams, every social media outlet's got something that's Edgar Hall of Fame at the end. When it's around voting time, and it's all just support for this Seattle legend, like you said, spent his 18-year career all with Seattle. Took him a little bit. He took about 4 years before he took over as a full-time starter, which hurt his long-term numbers, I guess, playing time-wise. But, I mean, this dude was legitimately one of the greatest right-handed hitters of all time. When you play with Ken Griffey Jr., and Ken Griffey Jr. says he has the best right-handed swing, or he's the best right-handed hitter he's ever played with. And Griffey's played with the likes of Alex Rodriguez, and it's pretty impressive. And just to reference the Mariner numbers, first in RBIs with 1,261, first in extra base hits with 838, first in walks with 1,283, first in runs with 1,219. And I mean, now part of that's him playing there for 18 years, but I mean, it's still a tribute to just how legendary he was over that stretch. And I mean, his 418 on base percentage is the fourth highest of any right-handed hitter in MLB history. His full stat line that you mentioned, the 312, 418, and 515, there's only five guys that can match that stat line: Lou Gehrig, Jimmy Fox, Roger Hornsby, Babe Ruth, and Ted Williams. The five hitters in MLB history that come close to those numbers across the board for Edgar. So, I mean, it's the dude fits all categories. He was the best at his position over a period of time. He has ridiculously great numbers. And the voting finally kind of reflected that when a bigger emphasis on walks and on base percentage and OPS and how important those are. And so that younger kind of sabermetric attitude towards stats led to 58%, 70%, and then finally 85.4, where he gets in this year. And he fits every single category. I can't say it enough. And even the postseason, 1995 season, the legendary season for Seattle, Edgar Martinez played a massive role in that. And then on top of that, when he played in the Yankees in the divisional series, the dude hit .571 with grand slam, 10 RBIs, of course the walk-off double. I mean, Edgar Martinez was a part of that 95 team that saved baseball. Edgar Martinez was the heart and soul of that 95 season that saved baseball in Seattle. And it's just about freaking.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame it took this long, but I mean, I guess I'll take it. aside from like all the stats, I mean, there's really not many people in sports that really mean as much to their team city as Edgar Martinez does. I mean, he's loved in Seattle. I mean, he really is like what Kobe is to Los Angeles. Edgar Martinez is to Seattle, pretty much. I mean, he's just super legendary. There's nothing like it. I mean, like I said, he has the stats, he has all those, and then he also has the impact on the game and the city. And he was a little bit ahead of his time, too. Like you said, the younger sabermetrics, like kind of generation, because kind of what made that push for him to get in. So, I mean, I kind of want to imagine what he would have been if he was a DH today in like today's game. and how more valuable he would be to a team and all that.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And I think DHs are widely more accepted now today. Like, nobody's going to bat an eye when David Ortiz gets elected immediately into the Hall of Fame. Now, he has a little bit of gaudier numbers, but I mean, it's that was a big issue for a ton of people, was Edgar Martinez isn't playing a lot of defense, so this and that. But I think in today's game, it's Edgar Martinez's game would be valued on another level, because it's not like he... Like, there's a lot of DHs in today's game that hit bombs. Like, Nelson Cruz, fantastic DH. Dude's great. Hit, I think, anywhere between, like, 270 and 300 in his time in Seattle with a ton of home runs. Edgar Martinez would be around a similar style like that, but over 300. You could count on him hitting over 300. You could count on his on-base percentage being over 400. And his OPS total, 900 plus. And I mean, that's elite. 900 plus OPS is considered elite.
Yeah, I mean, his career OPS is 900 plus. I mean, at his absolute peak, I mean, it would be touching that 1,000.
Exactly. And I mean, that's when you think of 1,000 OPS in today's game, you think of your Nolan Arenados, your Mike Trouts, Mookie Betts, MVP caliber players. And I know they also draw those MVP for their most of them for their fantastic defense. But that's in today's game, Edgar Martinez's numbers. Like I said, there's five players that can match that career stat. Yeah. That's unreal.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, shout out Edgar. Finally, he's in. I was there at the game when the Mariners retired his jersey, and the atmosphere is just crazy. So, I mean, if they do anything for him, which they more than likely will, for his induction or whatever, it'll even be more crazy than that.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you're gonna hear your chance all.
Yeah,
over
so I guess from one goat at his position to the goat at his position, Mariano Rivera, first year on the ballot, like you kind of touched on, unanimous, got in without a hitch, which is really no. It's kind of a surprise he is unanimous a little bit, but. No surprise that he got in at all on his first year. So, I mean, with that kind of said, few in sports have been as dominant as Rivera for as long. I mean, people that come to mind are kind of like LeBron, Kareem, Tom Brady, I guess, and all that. Like, it's really, his whole career, pretty much, he was the best closer. For his whole career, he was the best closer in the game. So, I mean, with that set, you could take it from here, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's for a guy that was originally recruited as an infielder for the Yankees, messing around, playing catch, and stumbles upon the cutter. The nastiest cutter in baseball history. I mean, it's your references to the GOATs were absolutely spot on. When you think of just all-time legends in sports, it's... You think of the LeBrons and the Michael Jordans and the Kobes, and that Mariano Rivera is the Michael Jordan to relief pitching, I guess. Dude is unmatched, and I will probably be unmatched forever. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these numbers are never broken. Dude was a 13-time All-Star in the postseason. He had 42 saves and a 0.7 ERA. Five World Series championships. I went to the series seven times. I mean, it's this is a funny thing that I saw in an article. More men have walked on the moon, 12, than have scored an earned run off Mariano Rivera.
That's definitely my favorite Mariano stat right there.
That's unbelievable. Mariano Rivera absolutely deserved to be the first unanimous. I would argue Ken Griffey Jr. Earned that as well. But I mean, at the end of the day, Mariano Rivera is undisputed greatest closer of all time. I guess you could try and argue somebody else with me.
I mean, you can't really.
I'm not even. Mariano is the GOAT. just because he was able to do it in the regular season and on the greatest stage. I mean, it's unbelievable. Super happy for him. Super happy that he gets in unanimously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the only real like hiccup he really has in his career is the 04 series against the Red Sox. I mean, other than that, he's been pretty much like perfect almost his entire career. So that's just crazy. And I mean, like you kind of touched on, he's more than deserving of being unanimous. But I mean, there were a few that should have been unanimous before him. I mean, it kind of goes into that also, like the Steph Curry was the first unanimous MVP. He deserved it, but there should have been dudes before him that were unanimous as well. So I mean, you said it too earlier in the episode that the voters kind of learned their lesson from Griffey a little bit. So I mean, that's good. I hope we see more unanimous Hall of Fame inductees from now on, because I mean, realistically, dudes deserve it. Like Ken Griffey deserved it. Mariano deserves it. He got it. So I mean, it'll be cool to see that too.
Yeah, at least in my future eyes, I see Ichiro being a unanimous selection, or at least he should be. Like, you know, 10, 15 years down the road when he's finally done playing. Overall, I think it was a really good Hall of Fame class. I loved everybody that was in. There wasn't really many heartbreakers. Crime Dog McGriff, 10th year on the ballot, missed out. That's a little sad, but I mean, his Hall of Fame case wasn't the greatest anyway. But other than that, I mean, everybody got in that needed to. Edgar on his last year, I mean, that's kind of the saving grace for everything. But I mean, from there's a few other interesting developments. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds both increased slightly, up near 60% now in their seventh years on the ballot. Kurt Schilling jumped almost 10% and got all the way up to 60, almost 61% in his sixth year on the ballot. So that's some momentum maybe getting him in. And if you want to kind of talk a little about Bonds and Clemens and their steroid implication.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be ridiculous to keep them out of the Hall of Fame just because of like their steroid past, I guess. I mean, Barry Bonds arguably had a Hall of Fame career before he even picked up a needle. So it'd be, for him anyway, it'd be ridiculous to keep him out of the Hall of Fame. I mean, Pete Rose being out of the Hall of Fame or being banned from baseball in general, that's ridiculous. And I would hate to see that again with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, because, I mean, they're both more than deserving. So, I mean, my kind of question is, how many more years will they have to wait till the last year, like Edgar Martinez, or do you think they'll get in before that or even get in at all?
I think they're going to have to wait. I do think that they should both be in. That steroid era is still, it's a real salty era. I understand everybody was doing it at the time and it's a thing, but I mean, it's, the game of baseball traditionally is supposed to be just like this picturesque sport that things are done the right way and this and that. It's America's game and all that. And so I think there's a lot of sting from people in that steroid era that broke these monster records of these baseball legends. And then we come to find out that they're juicing. So I think that they definitely have to wait. I do think they should get in. I think it will probably be 9th, 10th year for them. And I think that's okay, because I think so we're 7th year in for both these guys now. And it's when we initially look at them, it's the thought process when they're first in the Hall of Fame discussion and voting. It's, oh, we can't let Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens in. They use steroids. Like, no, no. And as the years go by, the narrative becomes kind of less of, we can't let them in because they use steroids, or it's like, are they going to get in? Maybe we should let them in. You know, they do have fantastic. And so I think that kind of just overall shift in public opinion, as it becomes less about punishing them for the metaphorical hurt that they put on baseball and more about like, oh, do they actually deserve to have their numbers recognized? And they kind of do, and that's kind of the sentiment that's going on. And so I think over time, this wear and tear will get them in, but I do think they're going to have to wait till like.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of understand that, making them wait and whatnot. But it would be a shame if they didn't get in. I mean, they're both two all-time greats. Barry Bonds, arguably the greatest ever to play baseball. I mean, I don't really get into that because it's kind of a touchy subject to say the least, but. Yeah, I stand with them. They deserve to be in. I would have voted them in already, but it's not up to me. I don't get a ballot, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I was kind of I'm speaking to at least a little bit of what I've learned mm-hmm. from the voters, like tracking the Edgar votes year in and year out, is that the public opinion definitely sways voters. And so, I mean, the more people that are like you and to a degree like me that says they should get in at some point or should get in general, that kind of public opinion starts to leak into the voters, I think, a little bit. And, I mean, it's a big reason why Edgar got in, and I think it'll eventually the leniency of the public towards Bond.
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff happened. It went down a while ago, too. So, I mean, kind of the newer like generation stepping up doesn't really have that grasp on it and doesn't really understand it as much and don't really understand like how much it kind of did hurt the game. So, I mean, they're less sensitive to that.
Yeah, exactly. And like they weren't right there in the steroid era, like right on the tail end of it, where you're looking at all these massive numbers like, oh man, that's incredible. These guys are incredible. To then find out like, oh, they're all using steroids. Yeah. Now our home run leaders hit 50 bombs. Like, and so it's, they're kind of just more used to that new age baseball and that harm isn't necessarily in the forefront.
So, I mean,
I like the way you
said. Do you have anything else on this? We could kind of get into our last little honorable mention, big bar, big bus, all that.
I want to just mention Curt Schilling, up to 61%, gaining momentum. He's a dude in that steroid era that kind of somewhat avoided or denied PED use, and so he's got borderline Hall of Fame numbers, like a decent ERA. The big thing for him, like the big thing supporting his Hall of Fame case, is that postseason dominance. He's got 3 rings and 11 wins and a 2.24 ERA, and you can think of him on elite championship teams like those 04 Red Sox and the Diamondbacks, and him and the Randy Johnson 1-2 punch. I mean, those are big things that go in his favor. I do think the overall body of work should be weighed a little more heavily, but I mean, at the end of the day, I think Curt Schilling is going to get in. I think it's just going to kind of depend on the strength of each Hall of Fame class. When you got really big names coming in, it's a little tougher to give one of those votes to Schilling. But I could see him getting in as at the very least on the final.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, he's more known for his postseason kind of heroics, which, I mean, in my opinion anyway, should matter a little more than regular season kind of stuff. Like Madison Bumgarner, for example, had that amazing run in 2016. And in the regular season, like, he isn't a scrub by any stretch of the imagination in the regular season, but he isn't really anywhere near that postseason Madison Bumgarner type pitcher. I mean, obviously we haven't really gotten to see him since he's been hurt, but I mean, that's something that, like, it's folklore kind of, you know what I'm saying? Like, it makes him more of a legend
in one
way, because he led a team to a championship pretty much. And I mean, I know if I'm like a Boston Red Sox fan or something like that, whatever team may be winning, I'd much rather have a dude come in here and shut it down in the postseason and win a ring 1 year than be absolutely dominant in the regular season for 10 years. I mean, look at Clayton Kershaw. I mean, I'd take that 1 year for Kurt Schilling in the postseason with the Red Sox than I would Clayton Kershaw's career, because I mean that's how much like I would value a championship as a fan of whatever team is winning. So
I think that's fair. At least in my opinion, I think there are far too many teams in baseball that rarely hit the postseason or rarely, if ever, get that championship opportunity. And so I think with so many players across the league, I think at least in Hall of Fame, the regular season has to be weighed pretty heavily, because you can't look at Ichiro and say, because he's only been to the playoffs two times, I think he went with the Yankees maybe, and then obviously the Mariners in 2001. And so you look at a guy like that whose numbers are basically all across the regular season. I mean, I think baseball varies a ton with situation to situation, but I do think that regular season numbers should play a large role. But again, when your postseason legacy becomes kind of like legendary, you think of the bloody sock with Schilling. I mean, that's what it is legacy building.
Yeah, and I mean, Hall of Fame is all about legacy. I like that you said that baseball is kind of situational, because other sports, it kind of is like regular season and what you did in the postseason, really, or in the playoffs, whatever. Like in basketball, one player can single-handedly change like the fate of an entire team, and you can't really do that in baseball. So, I mean, I like that you brought that up.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, it's in basketball and football, wins are a much more important stat. Especially like quarterback wins in football, and obviously postseason wins in basketball hold a greater weight than the 82 game season. But
yeah, so I mean, still, I'm pushing for Kurt Schilling, the bloody sock. I mean, it's legendary stuff right there. Yeah, so I guess I'll get into an honorable mention real quick for those that don't know, which I don't know why you would really want to know this. It's just kind of a funny thing. Derek Carr and Stephen A. Smith are now scheduled to fight. They're actually scheduled to fight, but Derek Carr sent out a few tweets calling the First Take duo Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith trash and clowns, and eventually sent out tweets challenging them to a fight. He like added Dana White and the UFC, asking what he could do to kind of like challenge somebody to a fight, pretty much. And so Stephen A. replied and calling for a sit down and one on one, whatever. He's not hiding. And the funniest thing kind of about this is that Stephen A. is listed as the favorite in this fight between him and Derek Carr, which, I mean, it has to be a troll, because, I mean, there's no way that a professional athlete doesn't run an analyst's fade. But it's a troll for sure, but, I mean, it's still funny.
I'm saying, I mean, dude.
Sad to say that this is my quarterback as of now. I mean, if he kind of spent less time on Twitter and more time kind of working, I don't think dudes like Stephen A. and Max Kellerman would be breathing down his neck, criticizing him as often as they do.
Well, yeah, they're not going to after he whoops up on some Stephen A. I don't know. That's just really funny to me. I guess he's just maybe banking on the Raiders.
Yeah, then he could just focus on his fight career, I guess.
Yeah, he's about to become a UFC champion. Big Reds Ballers and Busts up in here. We'll start with the good news. Big Reds Baller. Seattle Mariners and Ichiro, you know, they linked up, minor league deal, which will allow Ichiro to open the season playing for the Mariners in Japan. which is obviously an incredible thing for a Japanese-born player and a Mariner legend. Whether or not he stays on the club after that series, I think is kind of irrelevant. It's just another tribute to this goat of a player in Seattle, and the fans in Japan are gonna go freaking crazy. So I mean, it's awesome all the way
Yeah,
around.
I mean, it's
I
kind of
love
something
that,
that we all saw coming,
especially
really,
the
once that
MLB.
Japan series got scheduled for the Mariners. I mean, once, like, it was obvious that Ichiro's, he's old. He's older now, to say it the slightest. But, I mean, had this Japan series not been scheduled or whatever, Ichiro more than likely would have been released from the Mariners. But, they kept him on, like, a mentorship contract. It was kind of weird, the whole Ichiro thing last year. But I mean, we all kind of knew. Yeah. I
It
mean,
was
yeah, we
weird,
all
but it
kind of
was
knew, like,
super
in the back of
cool.
our
I mean, the
minds, it
dude
was
just
all
loves the
for so
game.
that he can play in that in the Japan series. I mean, Japanese born player, like you said, absolute legend, bigger legend over there than he is here, which is kind of crazy considering how legendary he is, at least specifically in the city of Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I talked about it earlier. First ballot Hall of Famer, should be unanimous. Dude's a freaking legend in
Yeah.
two different parts of the world. I mean, it's yeah, he's a legend. Another thing I think is gonna be cool is seeing him and newly signed Yusei Kikuchi probably starting game two
Yeah, I mean that'll be really cool,
of that
especially as like
Japan
a Mariners fan, like we
series.
both are. So, I mean, it'll be cool seeing Ichiro back for one last series, more than likely.
Yeah,
But I mean, at least we'll see him. Nah,
and all you
we're
gotta do
watching
is
tape
wake up at
after.
3 a.m. and watch the games. Do I remember back in high school when the Mariners first went over there?
Oh,
I legit woke up at 3 in the morning to watch opening day
jeez,
and Felix pitch against the A's, dude, and then I probably skipped school or
Yeah,
something, but it was
well,
totally
I
worth
mean,
it. I
if you
don't know.
say that,
It was just
I
awesome.
might stay up for it then.
Well, dude, Felix always does well opening day. We always beat the A's.
Yeah.
And then we lose every other game for the rest of the season, so moving on from good news though, it's not even really a bust, it's just kind of a big red, big sad. One of my favorite players in the league, Victor Oladipo, a couple nights ago went down with what looked like a gruesome knee injury, got stretchered off. Kind of defending somewhat on a fast break dunk attempt by Siakam. I see I another name we can't pronounce on this show, but a very good Raptor or an up and coming Raptors player, I guess I should say. And so unfortunately, Victor Oladipo tore his right quadriceps tendon. He's done for the season. And so I mean, it's just really disappointing. It's really disappointing in general when elite players go down with injuries and. Oladipo's continually on the rise the last couple years now, and so I mean it's sad for the Pacers big time as they're competing for kind of playing spoiler to the top four seeds in the East, and so I mean it's gonna obviously Miles Turner's playing well, and I mean the Pacers might be able to hang around, but you definitely
Yeah,
aren't as
and I
afraid of
mean
a
it
Pacers
sucks,
team without Victor
obviously, for
Oladipo.
Victor Oladipo, he's been on the rise. I mean, he was an all-star last year. More than likely, probably would have been one this year. His numbers were a little down this year in some areas, but they're also higher in other areas as well. So, I mean, he's really an all-around type player. I mean, he plays borderline elite defense. He's borderline elite on offense. I wouldn't say he's elite, but I mean, that's why borderline. But anyway, he plays every aspect of basketball really well. So I mean, it's really tough for him to be out for the rest of the year while he's still building his name for himself, really. So I mean, that's a bummer. And for the Pacers too, who are fighting for that fourth seed, trying to play spoiler. I mean, they kind of really did hit their rhythm as a team. With their supporting cast has stepped up a lot. Their coach is Nate McMillan is a really good coach. So I mean, It's a bummer all the way around for everybody involved. So, hope Victor Oladipo gets well. I mean, gets as close as he can, if not better, to where he was when he got hurt. So.
Yeah, and I think that's, like I said, hate to see injuries.
For
to
sure. I mean, kind of, add an honorable mention, saved it in the bank for after the Oladipo thing. That's kind of a good thing. Ryan Shazier, who, for those that don't know, was injured in a game. He's a Steelers linebacker. He was injured in a game last season, correct? Was when it was? Two seasons ago. And there is
two seasons ago
concerns that he may never walk again, let alone play football again. But there's reports recently saying that he's making incredible progress. He's jogging and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's a really good sign. And the Steelers also came out and said that they're planning to re-sign him. So we might actually see him back in the NFL. So, I mean, from one bummer injury to a good one.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. I remember when he came out for the draft pretty soon. No, I guess relatively soon after the injury, and he was kind of, you know, barely walking out there, and it was just, I don't know, that was a special moment, I think, in Steeler Nation. And every, I mean, if you don't know who Ryan Shazier is, look him up, or I don't know why you listen to our show, but I mean, Ryan Shazier is a fantastic story. So yeah, if we got to see him back in the NFL,
sure.
That would be one of the most legendary.
For possibilities, not being able to walk again to coming back. And I mean, obviously we don't know if he's going to come back, but I mean, it'd be really cool if he did and got back to a similar form of what he was before he got hurt, because he was a Pro Bowler in the last two seasons before he got hurt. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if he got back to that level, that would be even more impressive.
So, I guess that kind of wraps it up a little bit. Thank you all for listening and holding close. I mean, like I said, I'm sick, kind of. So, I mean, it's not the best quality of voice I got coming out. So, thank you for hanging in there. And this is Average Ant kind of signing off.
Yeah, I don't think you sounded that bad there, Ant, but Big Red sounds good as always, so peace out, y'all.